Welcome to The Current, a podcast produced by We Stand for Energy. We Stand for Energy is a community that supports a reliable, affordable, and sustainable energy future for everyone, and is a project of EEI, the National Trade Association representing U.S. investor-owned electric companies. My name is Brad Viator, Vice President of External Affairs at EEI, and I am your host. Today, we have the distinct pleasure of getting to have a conversation with our first mayor. We are talking today to Mayor Melvin Carter, the mayor of St. Paul, Minnesota. Mayor Carter, thanks so much for joining us here on The Current.
Thanks for having me on. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, I know that you're pretty focused on energy and climate issues, as I think a lot of us are, but I think you occupy a pretty unique seat as you're thinking about that. So what role do you think local leaders play in combating climate change?
An incredibly critical role. Local leaders are playing a very important role in combating climate change. We saw under the Trump administration, for example, when the federal administration said, we're going to pull America out of the climate accords, I was really pleased to be one of over 400 mayors across the country who said, you know what, we're going to keep our commitments where this is concerned. And the great thing is when 400 American mayors say we're going to do something, we're going to do it. And then beyond that, though, we all grew up with that statement, that phrase, think globally, act locally. And who is more prepared to act locally than local municipalities across the country? And so I think we're identifying a number of ways in which we can do things together and make a combined impact in a way that I think is actually greater than what you can do out of Washington, D.C. in the first place. Frankly, some of the things that we do might feel like a drop in the bucket if it was only St. Paul doing it by ourselves. When you multiply that by 400 local communities around the country, by local communities around the world, it can get really significant really fast.
Well, let's dig in then on acting locally. I want to learn a ton more about your EV spot network for sure, and I'll get to that in a minute. But what are some of the other things? How are you acting locally there in St. Paul to really have the climate impact that we have to have?
The first piece, Brad, is rehearsing and really understanding the climate impact that we have right now. I start speaking about climate crisis in different places around the country and even at home sometimes. And people look at me and say, hey, you're not a Gulf Coast mayor. You're not an East Coast or West Coast mayor. You're not a Florida mayor. What are you doing talking about climate crisis? And a lot of us here in St. Paul don't always connect some of the challenges that we face to climate crisis. But here's what I know. I know that 3 weeks after I got elected mayor, we had a typically large snowstorm that left children stranded on school buses until late in the night as we were trying to get them home because we've seen precipitation grow. I know that just a few months after I got elected mayor, we saw a bluff drop about 400,000 pounds of rock onto one of our busy streets. I'll always remember that was the last Saturday in April. Because that had been on the first Saturday in May, 1 week later, that could have dropped on our annual Cinco de Mayo parade and been an event of global proportion. We have seen heavier rainfall. We've seen higher flooding on the Mississippi River. We've seen historic drought conditions. When I was a child growing up in St. Paul, it would freeze kind of in November in the fall, and it would thaw in the springtime. Now, all of a sudden, we see it freeze in October and thaw in October and freeze and thaw in November and freeze and thaw in December and on and on and on. And we're starting to notice it's wreaking havoc on our streets. We're seeing more cracks and more potholes. We're starting to see that the children who live closest to our freeways are most likely to have asthma and on and on and on. We're seeing all of these things that are directly results of our climate crisis. And it's important if we're going to take bold action, it's first important for us to understand the extent to which our climate crisis is impacting us right now. In a city like St. Paul, the bulk of our emissions are going to come from buildings and they're going to come from transportation, as you well know. That's why that EV spot network is really important. We started with renovations to city buildings. We created a $5 million internal loan fund to install LED light bulbs and install upgraded HVAC systems. And the amazing thing about that is we're making big investments, multi-million dollar investments that'll break even 3 to 7 years out, depending on the investment, and just be savings for our taxpayers forever. The EV spot network that you're talking about is the nation's first renewable energy car share powered by 100% renewable energy. We're excited about that. We're excited about the opportunity to show not just our city, but show the world what that can look like and what that can be. So something of not just an existential crisis for the planet, it's also an existential endeavor for our city right now.
As you've made this climate assessment, have you started to connect the climate crisis and the cost that it imposes on your city? You're a mayor, right? You're a consequence guy. So you deal with like potholes and streets and stuff like that. And if things are cracking all the time, you got to continually invest more capital and people are all pissed off because taxes are going up because you got to pay for something that you didn't do, right? And so as you do that assessment,
have you been a mayor before, Brad?
I would never be elected anywhere, but I feel like that's like the world you're living in, right?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. As I talk about that rock slide, 400,000 pounds of rock doesn't then clean itself up. We have more linear frontage of Mississippi River than any other American city. So we take seriously our charge to send the Mississippi River to the rest of the country, whether it's drought or flood conditions on the Mississippi River. There's a cost to our community. You're absolutely right. There's a cost to our community in both the kind of the human resource cost, the labor force, but then also just the asphalt to keep filling potholes and keep patching cracks and to keep having to redo our roads and our infrastructure. And our residents are very frustrated by seeing those costs, even more frustrated by seeing the snowballing impacts of climate crisis on our community, pardon the pun, but it's something we have to be willing to tackle together. And again, that's why it's so important for people to understand what the reasons are so that we can understand how to really address it.
Well, I'm going to dig into what I'm thinking about as the meat of the conversation, and that's the EV spot network. I guess it's in St. Paul and Minneapolis, right? Like in the Twin Cities,
you know.
Cool.
Yes, we're doing it together.
Cool. I know y'all don't like to agree on a lot, so nice work there. Can you just tell me about it? Like, give me an overview of what it is, how it works, how deep into it we are?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very exciting. We're launching a renewable energy car share. You sign up as a member, and there's cars parked across our city. We're all familiar with the concept of a car share now. They're electric vehicle car shares powered by 100% renewable energy. At the same time, we're putting in a network of electric vehicle charging stations across our city, because everybody who has a car knows driving into work is great, but you got to find a gas station to be able to get it home as well. And so we want to build out that infrastructure that can support not only electric cars, but electric bikes and all the different types of ways that people want to get around through electric means. Our goal is for 90% of our community members to live within a 10-minute walk of no carbon or low carbon transportation option so that we can get around better. That'll help our streets we were talking about. It'll certainly help our climate and reduce our emissions and actually help us be living healthy as well, all at the same time. It's a new clean transportation option with a focus on some of our lowest income neighborhoods where we know the car ownership is the lowest. If we had been having this conversation 20 years ago, I used to joke that I can't afford to be an environmentalist, Brad. I thought of an environmentalist as somebody who bought hemp clothing and all organic foods and all this stuff that seemed to me to be just really, really expensive and really, really exclusive. When we don't care for our planet, the first people who feel the brunt of that is our lowest income communities and our communities of color. We feel the brunt of that through our energy bills. We feel the brunt of that through, you know, asthma rates in our neighborhoods. We feel the brunt of that through costs of everything that we purchase, from food to gasoline and everything else in between. And so having this opportunity to bring a resource like this online, they again, not just serves our greater community, but is concentrated to meet the needs of our lowest income residents and our lowest income neighborhoods. As we think about the first and second generation of electric vehicles, they've been obviously less affordable than gasoline vehicles. And as we transition to electric vehicles for their climate benefits, we also have to ensure that we don't leave our lowest income neighborhoods behind, so that people in all of our neighborhoods can afford to participate in this work, can afford to make the air that our children breathe a little bit cleaner, and can afford to be invested in ourselves and in our planet at the same time.
Has the program launched yet? What's the timeline like on that?
You know, we launched it. We got a hiccup because the vehicle that we were using was subject to a recall. We were all set to launch this fall. We had our soft launch, but ended up delaying the kind of big public launch as we see what the final disposition of this recall is going to be and what the timeline is going to be.
One of the things that the areas of pushback that I always hear in electric vehicles, particularly with low income neighborhoods, is like, yeah. Subsidies for like $80,000 Teslas. That doesn't make any sense. It's not going to impact my neighborhood.
That's right.
Right? Like, that's it. These cars are more expensive. You talked about it a bit. But your program's cool because you're doing something that people are already doing, like ride shares, and you're throwing them in neighborhoods where people don't have access to cars. I'll be very curious to sort of dive into some of the data later on to learn what the uptake is like. And also just think about that through the lens of, all right, if our uptake isn't exactly where we want it to be, do we need to create other subsidies for these types of programs to get them in use in those particular neighborhoods?
I think you can't overstate that, Brad. We've centered our environmentalism movements around penguins and around manatee and around the ozone layer. And I think it's a new shift to center it around people and the needs that people have in our everyday lives. We're really not asking people to do anything different than what we're used to doing. We're used to car shares now. We're used to vehicle shares. We're used to ordering stuff up on our mobile phone and going and, you know, being able to get in the car and drop it off. The more we get used to this, the more this isn't about asking you to do anything different. We're asking our community members to consider the opportunity that they have to not incur all of the costs of car ownership, to not have to get oil change every so many miles and to stop at the gas station so many times a week, to not have to pay the car insurance, not have to do all of those things that frankly keep families stuck in some of the cycles of poverty. But that's a lot of money we can put into our housing or into the food or groceries or doctor's visits or whatever it is we want to do with our young people. We're not asking people to do really anything strange and unusual. Go pick up your child from school, go get to work, go visit an aunt or uncle, go grocery shopping. And here's what I think of as even more convenient, even more effective and efficient, and certainly a more cost efficient option to be able to do it as conveniently as possible while saving the planet.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the partnerships. Like, who were the partners that came to the table with you in Minneapolis to make this thing a reality?
We've been blessed, I think, by a really broad partnership that's been fantastic. We've got a St. Paul-based company called Our Car. That's a nonprofit car share provider who's been fantastic. We have Xcel Energy here. We're fortunate to have a real forward-thinking electric utility, whereas other places around the country, I hear folks saying, well, how do you advance climate goals? How do you get around the pushback from your utility company? And I go, pushback? If anything, our energy company is pushing us forward and has been on the front end into some of this stuff. Our sister city across the Mississippi River, the city of Minneapolis, has been a good partner in this work. We've had to realize, you mentioned earlier, we don't always agree on everything. We end up being two separate cities. But as it turns out, the air molecules cross the border quite freely. The water molecules go back and forth across the river. And so for us to be separating, not to mention our community members. So if we're really talking about transportation, there's so many people who work over there and live over here, or work over here and live over there, or play somewhere else, that for us to really take ourselves seriously about a transportation network, we have to be willing and able to partner together where something like this is concerned. And then we've got a significant number of funding partners, including our Metropolitan Council, the U.S. Department of Energy has been great, and both the McKnight Foundation and Energy Foundation here. We've got this big, huge partnership locally. And then we're also doing it with support from Bloomberg Philanthropies for the American Cities Climate Challenge. We won that a couple of years ago. And this work that we're talking about right now was sort of the moonshot that we said, there's all the other goals that we want to pursue. And we've not been able to knock off a number of those. But this notion of this electric vehicle car share, this EV spot network, was maybe we can go for this as well. And we're really glad that we did.
The diverse universe of partners you have there is unreal. But you're right. That's the only way we're going to have this impact, is if you could bring it to the table. All right. So this is big. This is cool. I'm really excited to see the data. To be honest, I'm excited to come check it out. Is it in the time you usually want to be traveling to St. Paul? I mean, maybe now's all right, but
it's always the time you want to be traveling to St. Paul, Brad.
I got a buddy who runs a flag at the Vikings game. Maybe it's time for me to go see that. But
absolutely.
Yeah. But as you think about this, and clearly this project has more progress that it's got to make, as you think about like electrification going forward, what are the other things that you and the city of St. Paul are starting to think about? You talked about that, the building lighting project and the great program on energy efficiency. That's super cool. And then also you're broadcasting to a universe of a lot of energy companies. Tell us a little bit about what we can do to be more helpful and make the city of St. Paul a model of this.
Oh, that's a great question. Our goal is to do all the things, like I said, with regard to buildings, the LED lights, just thinking about how our building efficiency works. We created a game that we call Energize St. Paul. I think of it as like that TV show Biggest Loser. It's Biggest Loser for Buildings, where we've challenged building owners to reduce their emissions. And the great thing about it is you don't have to require them to do much of anything. They start to realize we're challenging them to save money on heating and cooling their building and operating their building. And they get all in it. We've got a couple hundred, I think, buildings sign up right away when we started it. And we've been able to reduce the carbon footprint of our buildings. As we build new neighborhoods in our community, our goal is to build them to be environmentally responsible, to be demonstrations environmentally. We're building homes without reliance on the fossil gas connections that so many of us require for heating and cooling. And like I said, for us and our city, we're knocking on the door of all-time high population right now. We've got two decades of growth in front of us. And we are rehearsing the fact that we have a need right now to redesign our city to accommodate thousands more people than we ever have before. So that means just fundamentally, people are going to have to get around differently. That's where that network of non-carbon and low-carbon transportation options is concerned, on all of those different ways that people get around. As a city, we don't control public transportation or transit options here, but we're sure always at the Capitol making sure that our state delegation and federal delegations know how critical it is to our success and vibrance as a community to be able to work together to expand transit options. And hopefully soon see a day where you don't have to bear the expense of car ownership to live in our community. I've got a close friend, Brad, who always reminds me that the one thing people hate more than the status quo is any change whatsoever. And all of us are invested in the way that we live our lives. All of us are invested in the things that we're used to. Sometimes we don't even realize how invested we are in keeping things the same way they've been. It robs us of the opportunity to realize that progress requires change. And so I think the thing that I would challenge all of us to do, and certainly the energy utilities to do, is to be on the front line. What I've learned about change can either be the biggest threat or the biggest opportunity. We can rethink our business model, how we bring value to today's consumers, to today's ratepayers, to today's taxpayers, to today's transit users, et cetera, and do what many of the companies that you were just talking about have done since their inception. And that meets a current set of events, a current set of circumstances, a current consumer mindset with a set of forward-thinking solutions that help bring us into the future.
Electric companies make investments for 40 or 50 years. So when they go in and they're making an investment, it's something that's going for that long. So they have to distance themselves from the moment they're in and think about the world and where it's going to be. So I think a lot of the things you're talking about and the pace of progress and the change that you're making in and around your city, people that make these big infrastructure investments, the same is true. I'm sure you run a water utility. It seems true with some of the gas companies, et cetera. Those are partners that you want, right? Because they are exercised in that place of thinking about 40 years from now. So that's the one thing I'll flag. Building codes. I see it all across the country. I live in Washington, D.C. We have it here in DC, where the building codes are changing dramatically. Number one, DC is a very walkable, livable, car-free city. You can do that, right? And so there are building codes that are being implemented, right? Less parking, more sidewalks, you know, more access for dockless scooters or whatever the heck it is. Like, those are the big debates that we're having at our city council. Are you all seeing a lot of those discussions transpire and just like some aggressive changes on the building code front to meet that future demand of 200,000 new residents coming in?
We are, and we're having conversations at the state capitol about some of those things. We have big conversations here about density, about bike lanes, about mandatory parking minimums. We just eliminated mandatory parking minimums just last month. It really doesn't make any sense for us as a city. On one of our main streets, we have a nightclub that doesn't have its own parking, and it's right next to a laundromat that does have its own parking. I would go way out on a limb, Brad, and suggest that the times in which a laundromat needs a lot of parking and the times in which a nightclub needs a lot of parking are almost the perfect complements of one another. But when we say that you both have to have your unique parking, we're being repetitive. We are underutilizing our land, which is incredibly and enormously valuable. And we are creating more concrete on the ground in ways that we should be thinking in the opposite direction. So yes, we're having big conversations really about all of those things, about what it means to build up a little bit higher so that we can use our land more efficiently. We're having conversations about the proper width of street lanes and how we reduce the design speed on our streets so that we can both be safer as we cross the street or as we navigate the street, and maybe reduce somewhat the amount of linear square feet that we have of asphalt to maintain. And so there's implications for every aspect of city building. And I'll tell you, local government across the country is where all the most action is happening. And I think we'll continue to see cities and counties, municipalities, townships across our country be the force that's pushing Washington, D.C. to catch up with what's going on in the country.
I love how hard you're charging. And I love that you're deciding to give back to the community that you're in. Thank you for your passion and commitment. So thank you for that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
We hope you found this to be an informative 15 minutes, and we look forward to bringing you additional expert insights on energy policy. To learn more about EEI and the electric power industry, visit www.eei.org. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts by searching for The Current and We Stand for Energy.